how they get better, where they go to get better, and how exciting it is to get better, especially a clean and sober life. Because what we know is alcohol and drugs aren't our problem. Sobriety is. So how to live a sober life is what we're here to talk to you about, and how that happens and how we get there. Before I introduce my great friend Marty to you, I have one announcement for my friend Barb Decker at Ivy Tech College. There is a program this Tuesday, April 16th, from 11 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon in the Wright Administration Building at the University of Southern Indiana. It is a free training, and the title is The Prosecution of Crimes Against Children. So I think that would, if you have the time and can go, that'll be interesting, because there's a lot of opinions, a lot of legislation, a lot of us looking at addicted parents and how that affects children. Is that a crime that the parent is addicted and drinking or using drugs around their children? So that's what this whole forum is about, a discussion. Mike Perry, who is a prosecutor here in the juvenile division in Vandenberg County, is the speaker. So I think it'll be a very interesting program if you're available. 11 to 1, Tuesday, April 16th, in the Wright Administration Building. It's called The Prosecution of Crimes Against Children. Thanks, Barb, for sending that to us so we can let the community know. Well, this is a beautiful day. Summer has finally come, and there's a lot of gratitude in this room, I can tell you that, because the speaker you're going to hear today has been vigorous in his work, in his sobriety, and getting clean and staying sober and enjoying it. Anybody that knows Marty knows that he's fired up about sobriety, so I know you're going to enjoy hearing his story of experience, strength, and hope. I've known Marty since his sobriety date is October 31st, 2000, so he's been over a decade clean and sober, and has started to live and grow up in those days, so he's going to share with us. Don't hesitate to call 424-1400 if you have any sharings, comments, or questions for Marty, because he's definitely the expert on his life and how he got where he is today. So, Marty, thanks so much for always, always, always being willing to help out.
Thank you,
thank
Lisa.
You.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marty, and I am an alcoholic. And as Lisa said, I've been sober since October 31st of 2000. A little bit about my background. You know, I don't think anybody decides one day I'm going to be an alcoholic or I'm going to be a drug abuse drugs or anything like that. You know, my problem even from an early kid was that I could never live life on life's terms. I've always lived in a fantasy world, so to speak. And some of that is being a victim of circumstances, and some of that, I guess, is just, you know, that was who and what I am. I was born in Western Kentucky. I would tell you years ago that I was abandoned at birth by an alcoholic woman. The truth of the matter was that this lady actually turned out to give me the best life that I ever could have. You know, but there's a lot of issues there and resentments and everything like that that, you know, we carry because we think that we're not good enough. And the fact of the matter was, I think she saw that I was good enough. And that I would not find out that until after I'd been sober for some time. But anyway, she left me with a loving grandmother that I heard every day, "I'm proud of you, I love you," and all those wonderful things that you see on TV that you think that's how life should be. And, you know, when I got a little bit older, I realized that life really wasn't like that, and I didn't like that. That wasn't fair. So that's where that imaginary world came into play. My grandmother was a wonderful woman. My first exposure to an alcoholic was actually a great uncle. It was her younger brother. And I knew that, I remember one time when I was 3 or 4 years old and he had come into town. We lived in a little city outside of Owensboro, Kentucky, and he lived in Louisville, Kentucky. He had been in the military, so he was probably dealing with a lot of demons. And he got extremely intoxicated and just went absolutely insane. He was tearing the house up and he was crying, please help me, don't come near me. All those things that you sometimes associate with our disease. And, you know, as a young kid, you think, I never want to be like that.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
And I remember them taking him out of our house in an ambulance, and he was, you know, strapped down and everything like that. And I thought, wow. And I really didn't know a whole lot about what was going on or anything like that, other than they were taking him away. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I don't think that I ever saw him after that. The alcohol was not anything that was predominantly major in the house with my grandmother. I do remember her going out. She had a special friend. She was a widower. Her friend was a widower. And they would go out once or twice a month, and they would go to the Legion, and they would go dancing. And, you know, I could smell the liquor on her breath. They liked the salty dogs and all those old-timey drinks. And,
those old lady drinks.
Yes. And it's funny because when I was about 7.5 years old, and one of the things that I realize now looking back that is not normal, my grandmother had anywhere from 15 to 30 different prescriptions on her table. And there was a pill for everything. And you know, it wasn't until years later that that made any sense to me. So, you know, I think that there was some addiction in the family even before I realized there was some addiction in the family. But anyway, she went to a small town doctor who owned the pharmacy. So he was prescribing all these different things. Years later, he committed suicide because of malpractice. People were pressing charges for him. The same situation with other people.
It wasn't Dr. Mollenkamp here, was it?
No. This was actually in Calhoun, Kentucky. So,
okay, but a Mollenkamp type.
Yes, exactly.
Doctor.
Exactly. Mm. So, my life kind of changed really drastically, and I think that's the turning point, and that's where other things started changing in my life. I did not know that the woman that was my biological mother was my biological mother. I always assumed that she was my older sister. So our family was really good about
secrets.
And, you know, I've learned today that we're only as sick as our secrets will allow us to be.
Right.
And so if there's something inside that's, you know, holding you back, I think it's very important that you share that.
You
get help, or you share that with a confidant.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and Lena, who was my birth mother, her and her boyfriend at the time were waking me up and said, come on, Mama needs help. So we were moving to Louisville, Kentucky. And that's where the changes, and I was sharing with Lisa before the show, a lot of things started to change. Like I said before, I lived in a small town. When I say small, I mean small. It had a four-way stop. It had three taverns and a post office. So it had its priorities straight. You know, it was a good little Catholic community. And so anyway, when we moved to Louisville, that's where things started to change tremendously. We lived in a neighborhood that I was not accustomed to. I mean, there were drug dealers. There were prostitutes. There was a transvestite that lived across the street.
Wow.
All kinds of chaos going on any time of the day. And that's where a lot of things really started to change. I remember seeing drug use in front of me. I didn't know what drugs was before then. I'd seen people smoke cigarettes. That was just normal in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know about the drug use and things like that. So it was kind of... I see these people as they were doing it, and I'm thinking, well, why would you want to do that? Because it seemed like they were just in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And let me clarify something. Drugs were never an issue for me, and the only reason they were never an issue was because I was always so intoxicated. Every time I ever tried them, I never got the effect.
Mm-hmm.
Because had I ever tried them sober, I'm pretty sure I would
have. A love affair may have developed.
Yes, exactly, exactly. There was a little brief bout of speed, but, you know, I think we all do that.
That just enhanced your drinking,
yes.
Right?
So, but that summer, some crazy things happened. There was an older kid in the neighborhood who was probably 17 or 18, and he kind of took a shining to me. And I was an introvert. I was a little fat kid that had a speech impediment. And, you know, I went from being the center of someone's universe to being someone in a household full of seven people. I had two half-siblings that I really didn't even know, you know. They were a lot younger than I am. And there was always some type of, people were always coming and going in the house. And but anyway, this neighbor kid had taken a liking to me, so to speak. And there was some sexual abuse at that point in time. And I remember going to tell Lena about this, and the comment made to me was, well, what did you do to cause this? And
how old were you, Mom?
I was eight. I was mm-hmm. eight. And that's when I started to shut down mm-hmm. and internalize everything and keep things inside. What mm-hmm. I found out later and is that my birth mother had been a victim of the same typical thing. A matter of fact, there had been several women in our family that had been abused sexually. But that was the way the family dealt with it, is what did you do to cause it? We don't talk about those things. And that's where I say, if there's something going on in your life, you damn well better talk about it. Because
yes.
if you don't, you're going to die.
Mm.
And so all kinds of craziness started happening. And my grandmother could tell that there was something going on, but she didn't know what, and she'd ask me what was wrong, and I would just say I'm homesick and everything like that. So she made arrangements for me to come live with a family here in Evansville that was her niece and nephew. And, you know, wonderful people, you know.
Got you away from there, but still, a whole new place to adjust to
there,
again.
And there again, I'm going from being the center of someone's universe to having to play with two younger siblings to being thrown into a family that on the outside looked like, once again, everything that you see on TV. And, you know, and my adopted parents are wonderful people. They were very wonderful people. I also believe that they were probably children of alcoholic households. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
wow.
our parenting skills are, they come to us from our own parents.
It's just multi-generational, isn't it?
I would agree.
Mm. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've got to take a break for a minute and hear from our sponsors. We'll be back to finish hearing Marty's story.
It's a proven fact that one in three adults will be affected by a mental health or substance abuse issue. Think about that. One in three. Think about your family, your friends. If you or someone you care about is suffering from depression, anxiety, anger, or any type of chemical dependency, including alcohol, Brentwood Meadows can help. Left untreated, these conditions can lead to pain and suffering that destroys lives. Help yourself or a loved one today. Call Brentwood Meadows to schedule a free evaluation at 858-7200. Phones are answered 24 hours a day.
Attention furniture buyers! Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville's massive $1 million warehouse clearout is going on now! Millions of dollars of warehouse inventory has been shipped to the showrooms. Get massive store-wide savings on living room, dining room, and bedroom furniture, floor models, even mattresses. All selling at massive clear-out price cuts at the massive $1 million warehouse clear-out. Now through Sunday. Hurry to Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville.
Thank you, Tri-State, for making KC Beauty Mar your one-stop shop. We carry thousands of hair products to meet your every need with over 600 synthetic wigs. Come check out our authentic snapbacks for only $25.99. Boots are buy one, get one half off. And you can't beat our large selection of clothing and accessories. And there's even a 30-day layaway plan. Ladies, we even service your eyelashes for just $4. Stop in Monday through Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. or on Sundays from noon to 7 p.m. KC Beauty Mart, located on Van Avenue, next to the Family Dollar, is your one-stop shop.
Just in time for spring, the Home Depot has 10% off special order Anderson windows, patio doors, and accessories. That's 10% off the number one brand in windows. They'll stand up to the harshest conditions, and their energy efficiency should keep high energy bills out of your mailbox this summer. Now's the time, thanks to 10% off special order Anderson windows, patio doors, and accessories. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through April 17th. U.S. only. Just over details.
Prices are falling fast at Rent-A-Center. It's the Rack Rolldown. We've rolled down prices throughout the store to their lowest levels ever. Shop our new lower prices on your favorite brands. Everyone's pre-approved for 90 days same as cash or flexible weekly or monthly payments with no credit needed. Hurry in and save like never before with new lower prices at Rent-A-Center. See store for details. Pre-approval means no credit check or credit required. Rental purchase transaction, 90 days same as cash, now valid in Vermont.
You're listening to Radio Rehab on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM, WEOA. We encourage you to call into this live program at 812-424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. You can also listen on the World Wide Web at 1400 AM, WEOA.com. We thank our guests for coming in today. And now, back to Radio Rehab.
Hi, we're back listening to Marty's story. Marty, you had talked about when you moved to Evansville then, as a, before adolescence even.
Right, right. So as I said, I moved in with a family, you know, and up until this point, I had never had a male role model in my life. I'd never had a father. My birth father was never in the picture. My grandfather had already passed away. So I'm here in Evansville, but my grandmother's still living in Louisville, so I'm riding back and forth on holidays and things like that on a Greyhound bus, and I remember when I turned 8 years old, and my birthday is New Year's Eve, so I don't know if I'm predisposed to being an alcoholic or not, but you know...
Because of your birthday.
It's a good start, you know?
Right.
Anyway, I remember having... My grandmother gave me that salty dog. And you know what? I did not get the effect that we talk about sometimes. It was not a first love. I was
sick.
I was sicker than a dog. for 3 days. And I swore I would never drink vodka again. It's funny. That was what my last drunk was on. So
never say never, right?
Yeah, never say never. And I was just being deathly ill from that. So life here in Indiana started to take place. And, you know, we went to church every Sunday. And there again, it was on the outside, we looked like the nuclear family. On the inside, though, there was a lot of problems. My family, the only emotion that they ever knew how to show was anger. Or they dealt with it through anger. There was not a, you know, and I know that my parents loved me. Mm-hmm. I know that. Otherwise, why would they have done what they did for me time and time again, you know? But I always just kind of felt like that square peg. Mm-hmm. Always felt that way. Was an altar boy. Now, this is where that aha moment comes into play. The first time I'd ever served Mass, after church, I was with an older altar boy, and I'm like, well, what do you do with the leftover wine? And he said, well, you drink it. And I was like, oh. And that was the amazing feeling. But really, not a lot of drinking took place. And there was a lot of drinking in the household, as far as my father was concerned. I never really saw my mother drink a whole lot, although I think that she and the pharmacist were good friends. my drinking really did not take into major play until I was 16, 17 years old. There again, you know, I'm a chameleon. I can adapt to the arena that I'm in.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I was friends with the jocks, the band kids, the smart kids, everything like that. And I was a great actor. Everything was so wonderful on the outside, but on the inside, it was just miserable. And I remember I started drinking my senior year, and it wasn't a daily thing. It didn't become a daily thing for probably about 10 or 15 years, but it became a problem real quick. And there was never any consequences. I guess I was very fortunate for that. In the most part,
you mean legal consequences?
Legal consequences.
Okay. There were probably consequences.
Yeah, there were consequences.
Not legal.
I mean, the only major one consequence that I can think of when I was still living at home is that it was after graduation and went to a graduation pool party and we broke into someone's liquor cabinet and I drank a gallon of vodka in a very quick amount of time because I wanted to escape who I was. And when I was drinking, I could never find that cutoff point where I was, you know, that fun drunk. I went from that fun drunk to being, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Is he going to get sick? Is he going to break down and cry? What will happen next? Mm-hmm. And that went on for a long time. And that particular day, I got extremely intoxicated. They took me home. I lived on a dead-end street, so they basically rolled me out of the vehicle at the corner, and I crawled down the street. And, it was like, so then I went on to college, and there again, not really feeling like I fit in anywhere, because I hadn't dealt with anything on the inside, you know, there again, we stuff our emotions, and I did that. I joined a fraternity in college, and you know, where it was the norm to have drinks on a daily basis, and you know, when weather like this becomes suntanning 101, it's like you ditch your afternoon classes, you pull the couches out onto the front yard, and fire up the grill, and life is good, you know,
booze in hand.
Yeah. And I had my first 12-step. When I was in college, I had a fraternity brother that had gotten sober. And although when he talked about, when he 12-stepped me, I wish, and I don't know if it would have been any different. It doesn't really matter because what happened has happened. Mm-hmm. We can't do anything about our past. We can learn from it. Mm-hmm. He never really took me to AA meetings, but he was there for me.
He was sober.
He was sober, and he was there for me. He did take me to church, and he went to a different faith than what I had grown up in, and it was a little bit more colorful. But, you know, there was something about this. It was like, and I think as I look back now, it's all perception of an interpretation of things, isn't it? I think that I heard one thing, when in reality, I was just, the way I transposed that in my brain was something totally different. I think I thought that if God hated me, then it would be okay that I'm a failure in life. You know, I guess that's what I thought. And it's like, or these bad things are happening.
You're cursed.
Because God doesn't like me.
Aww.
And I know that's not the case.
But in your little head, that's what you...
Yeah.
You were young and restless and drunk.
And drunk.
Yeah.
And, you know, so... But I remember going to this church with him for about a month and a half, 2 months. And it felt good. And I didn't drink for maybe a couple of months on the weekends. Because I was not... At that point in time, there again, I still wasn't a daily drinker. But after... I always felt like I was never good enough, and I dropped out of college, and that's kind of when, you know, you go through jobs and relationships and all those things that are consequences.
The externals start to
work
out.
You know, I dropped out of college, and I got a job in an industry that I thought I was really a big dog because it was a decent paying job. And I enjoyed that job, but the problem was the ego started to kick in, and I'm like, okay, you know, and at this, I'm that age where it's okay to go to the bars and things like that, and I would do that, and I had to be the big shot. The forget-me-not used to have quarter beer night. My first paycheck, I spent $60 at quarter beer night. Who does that?
An alcoholic.
Exactly. And I don't remember anything from that.
God, the forget-me-not. Is that still around?
Well, it's Taroni's now.
My God, you're right. Yeah.
That
was your spot, huh?
That was a spot. That was a college spot.
Yeah.
The Flock of Seagulls was there.
That's right.
So, you know... my drinking just it started to become more and more of an impact in my life, and I did what a lot of good alcoholics do. You know, financially I was struggling, so I thought I need a second job. Well, I got a second job in a bar. That's going to fix everything.
Oh, wow.
And if you're an addictive personality like I am, that becomes addictive in itself, even if you're not an alcoholic or an addict.
Money.
The quick money, you know.
You're right, yeah.
And that was just a whole different world that I was exposed to. And boy, was I exposed to.
Yeah, being a bartender.
So
you meet all kinds of people.
You do. And, you know, there again, it paid to have a bartender or someone that was, you know, friendly, you know.
Sure.
Know. And I was very fortunate. I make friends very easily. Mm-hmm. You know, there again, that chameleon personality. And they laugh at me at work now. And it's like, do you not know anybody in this town? It's like, well, Evansville's really not that big. And of course, now that I'm in the rooms of AA, I know a lot more people. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm very guarded about that because, you know, that's not my place to say anything.
Right.
And I'm thankful for that because that's a safe place for anybody when they want to go. And I'm grateful for that. So, you know, I, like a lot of us, I bounced around and then landed a job with another company that was a pretty decent job and took a liking to the store manager who was going to groom me to be the next success story. And that's
on your way up.
Yeah, that's where the geographical cure came in. I moved from Evansville, Indiana to Knoxville, Tennessee. Mm. And, you know, everywhere you go, there you are.
Right.
You know, prior to moving there, I had people tell me, you know, maybe you shouldn't drink so much. Mm. Or maybe you should pace yourself or try water between your drinks and everything. Like, all those things came back to haunt me in 2000 in a good way. Mm-hmm. Because when I assure you, when I walked into the Mulberry Center, I did not think that I was an alcoholic. I just thought I had a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And I did. Mm-hmm. But most of them were because I was trying to medicate myself. So, but I did the geographical cure and
off to Knoxville.
Off to Knoxville.
New job, new beginning.
New beginnings. Right prior to that, though, I decided that the solution for me, my life would change if I would settle down and get married. And I moved in with a woman, and it wasn't working out. So right before that, or after that, I had gone to my parents and had asked about moving back in, and I'm really grateful for that. But as I was older, my dad and I became really good drinking buddies. Mm. And I would justify going because I wouldn't make sure that he didn't get into trouble.
Taking care of Dad.
Yeah, taking care of Dad.
So you came back to Evansville.
Well, this is before I moved to Knoxville.
Oh, okay.
It's right before, about a year and a half before I moved to Knoxville.
Gotcha. I'm keeping the timeline. Okay. That was going to be your geographical cure, right. Knoxville. Okay. Right. Radio Rehab, don't go away. We've just got to take a break. We'll be back and hear about Marty's geographical cure to Knoxville. Be right back.
Our country was stricken by horrific tragedies in 2012. This has brought the topic of mental health to the forefront of all of our minds. It is so important for our community to recognize and guide our loved ones to seek help. Please, please call Brentwood Meadows if you know someone who may be suffering from a mental health issue. It could be depression, anxiety, or even loneliness. These people need our help. Call Brentwood Meadows today at 858-7200. There's hope. There's help. That's 858-7200.
Attention furniture buyers! Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville's massive $1 million warehouse clearout is going on now! Millions of dollars of warehouse inventory has been shipped to the showrooms. Get massive store-wide savings on living room, dining room, and bedroom furniture, floor models, even mattresses. All selling at massive clear-out price cuts at the massive $1 million warehouse clear-out. Now through Sunday. Hurry to Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville.
Tune in every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for the Sunday Evening Gospel Show, hosted by Byron Lander. Byron plays your favorite traditional and contemporary gospel music while providing you with inspirational thoughts and messages that will bless your soul. You can call in your musical and prayer requests at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. The Sunday Evening Gospel Show is always found right here on Magic 98.5 FM and 1400 AM.
Listen Monday through Friday at 7:45 a.m. for your Live Smart Tip of the Day, sponsored by Vectren. These weekly tips provide you with some free and low-cost ways to keep your energy costs under control during the winter heating season. To manage your account or to learn about Vectren rebates or other conservation tips, log on to www.vectren.com. Your Live Smart Tip of the Day is heard here on 1400 a.m. and the new Magic 98.5 FM.
Welcome back to Radio Rehab on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM WEOA. Phone lines are always open to share your live comments, so give us a call right now at 812-424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. And now, back to Radio Rehab.
We're back with Marty, who is now off to Tennessee to take on a good job that's going to get him sober. Did it work?
It did not work. It did not work. Right about a year prior to me moving to Tennessee, though, my father had a freak accident and he died. Mm. And the drinking started picking up then. And then my mother was diagnosed with cancer. And that became kind of a long ordeal. But anyway, I ended up with this company, great company, and I ended up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and there I was, me, myself, and all the demons, and I would drink at them and everything like that, and wonderful people there. If you've never been to that city, you should go. They also have really amazing meetings there, too, so... But anyway, there I was again, doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results, as we always do. And have a very dear friend, and once again, he was someone to point out that, you know, you're drinking too much, and, you know, this. And it got to the point where there were times that if he was planning on going out, he would not even remotely answer his phone, knowing that I would want to go along with him. And, you know, so, and I look back now and I think, wow. So I'm in Knoxville for a couple of years, and my mother is battling cancer off and on. And, you know, and right before 2000, I'm having conversations with her on the phone, and I can sense that something's wrong, but not really knowing what's wrong. And, I just had this feeling inside at the first of the year of 2000 that I needed to get back to Indiana. Of course, I think there was a lot of other reasons. I think the geographical cure was coming too.
You know, I never was it.
I never got fired from a job. Mm-hmm. I always quit before it happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would brag about that. But you know, the truth of the matter was, is it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I just kind of forced it. And I don't know if that was going to happen then or not. I just kind of felt like the boom was getting ready to come. Mm-hmm. So I called my old boss and I said, you know, I think there's something going on with my mom. I really need to get back home. I needed a job. And she said, well, let me talk to my boss. And anyway, long story short, I get a phone call from her, says, come back whenever you need to. Later that afternoon, I got a phone call from my younger brother stating that our mother was dying and he needed help. And I'm like, well, come and get me. So I moved back to Indiana in February of 2000, and I remember riding in through Nashville and looking out the window at the mountains and everything and thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? I can't drink through this. How can I not drink through this? But our big book tells us if we have a justifiable reason that we don't have to. The problem was I couldn't justify that reason for very long. So I get back to Indiana in 2000, February. My mother is dying. And I'm taking care of her, and I'm very resentful. Lots of things are building up inside of me, anger and everything like that. Now, mind you, I did not drink from February 5th of 2000 until April 7th of 2000.
2 months.
Because I was taking care of my mother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she was dying and she needed certain medications and pain medication and things like that. So I just didn't feel comfortable with that. And, you know, I sit there every day and I would watch her just slip away a little bit more. But in a lot of ways, that was very good because I always felt that nobody ever wanted me. I felt that I was never good enough. And that relationship, my mother and I had that love-hate relationship for years. And I started to realize as her siblings were coming around to help take care of her, how the damage began. And it didn't start with her. It was long before her. I mean, she had similar situations in her life that happened to me. So, you know, as I said before, the patterns that we have today sometimes are patterns that were blazed before us. Well, she, the morning of April 7th, I got up and the nurse came in and was taking her statistics and she said, honey, you need to call your family. And that afternoon she passed away. That night I got extremely intoxicated. And I drank continuously up until October of that year. And a lot of crazy things started to happen in my life. Those consequences and those things that I would brag about that had never happened to me, some of them started happening. I got arrested. I was facing some, what I thought at the time, jail time, because I don't like to deal with confrontation either. And the drinking picked up. The weekend of my last drunk was going to be my last weekend. I was going to kill myself. I was going to drink and take enough pills to put myself out of the problem.
How old were you, Marty?
I was 37.
So you were ready to commit suicide?
I was ready. And that's not the first. Thoughts of suicide were there before they happened. In my mind, I think probably more than anything when I was younger. But this was the one, you know.
And you had a plan.
I had a plan. And surprise, it didn't work.
Thank God.
I woke up on the morning of the 31st of October. And I have never felt so much physical and mental pain. But I did not know, and I remember waking up in the middle of blackouts and seeing those Parkside treatment commercials at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I think they put them on there for a reason.
at that hour, yeah.
So I didn't know what to do. Both of my parents are deceased. I'm not real close with my family, and so I called my boss. This woman has no idea about alcoholics. Mm-hmm. But what she did was she saved my life. She came to my apartment. We talked. She would not leave until I made a phone call. She didn't care who I called, but I was going to call for help. So
wow.
I called Mulberry Center. They could see me for 3 or 4 days. Mm. And so I white-knuckled it for 4 days. That's the first time that... But I also felt that I was way too important to go to treatment. I don't know why, but, you know, the ego. I'm a legend in my own mind. And I remember going to Mulberry, and I walked in and out and in and out. And, I'm going in there, I'm not going in there. And then they ask you all those questions, and, you know, I think I'm doing really good. And they're like, we think you need intensive detoxification. I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. I'm way too important, you know. Mm. Mind you, that I would justify that I needed to work because they needed me. They didn't need me. Mm. So I agreed to IOP, daytime IOP. And that embarked me on a journey that I never in a million years would imagine.
IOP stands for
Intensive Outpatient
Treatment. You didn't have to stay all night because you were too important, you were willing to go during the day.
I was willing to go during the day.
Thank God for day treatment
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. But you know what? When I went in for my health evaluation, my blood pressure was 220 over 160.
No way. You did need inpatient.
Yes, I did, but I was way too important.
Of course.
So the last drunk was 3 gallons of Absolute vodka.
For God's sakes, that's a high tolerance.
A bottle of sleeping pills.
How many fifths are in a gallon? Jeez.
A lot.
Yeah,
that
two.
At least
that's 64 shots per gallon.
4-day weekend, so.
Oh, my God. The tolerance of the alcoholic, huh? What you can put away in a day.
Exactly.
No wonder your blood pressure was so high. It was Absolute.
It was Absolute.
Ooh.
And I remember going in and still not thinking that I needed to be there.
Isn't that the irony of this thing?
But God. There was a savior there that day. I went into my group after my evaluation, and the counselor kind of looked at me kind of strange, like, why are you coming in here? And we'll sit down. And I said, okay. And I went to sit down, and to the right of me was someone that I had gone to high school with. And that was probably my first saving grace in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't know if he hadn't have been there had I gone back.
Somebody familiar there, you mean?
You know, I was so worried about I was so important. Mm. I'm not that important. But I don't want anyone to recognize me, but yet when I met him and saw him there, I was so grateful that he was there. And I think maybe that might have been
a turning point.
And you know, in treatment they tell you a lot of things, and I remember my first AA meeting, it was pretty neat. Still very scared.
You didn't think you were going to have to go to AA too, right?
I was going to have to go to AA,
right?
But I did. You know, they told me to go to a lot of meetings, get a sponsor, pray, and that, you know.
And that's pretty repetitious, isn't it? You hear that all over the place.
Standard.
Pray, go to meetings, get a sponsor.
Get a home group.
Don't
get in a relationship.
So you're learning all these new lingos and languages.
So anyway, I went to Mulberry and
and they introduced you to AA,
To AA. For a long time, the 5:30 meeting at Old Stone 3 was my staple.
Mm.
And
every day?
Just every day, sometimes even more. 90 and 90, I was doing like 120 and 90 because I was afraid. If I was left by myself, I wasn't comfortable with that. I still wasn't comfortable with the whole sponsorship.
And the whole sober stuff.
Right.
Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to Marty, and now he's getting into his program of recovery. We'll be right back.
It's a proven fact that 1 in 3 adults will be affected by a mental health or substance abuse issue. Think about that. 1 in 3. Think about your family, your friends. If you or someone you care about is suffering from depression, anxiety, anger, or any type of chemical dependency, including alcohol, Brentwood Meadows can help. Left untreated, these conditions can lead to pain and suffering that destroys lives. Help yourself or a loved one today. Call Brentwood Meadows to schedule a free evaluation at 858-7200. Phones are answered 24 hours a day.
Attention furniture buyers! Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville's massive $1 million warehouse clearout is going on now. Millions of dollars of warehouse inventory has been shipped to the showrooms. Get massive store-wide savings on living room, dining room, and bedroom furniture, floor models, even mattresses. All selling at massive clear-out price cuts at the massive $1 million warehouse clear-out. Now through Sunday. Hurry to Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville.
Hey, this is Walt Clyde Frazier with a message for every man listening right now. Are you making more bathroom trips than you used to? Are you waking up at night to go? If you said yes, I want you to take down a phone number. Because for a limited time, you can try free bottle of Super Beta Prostate. You heard right, you can try the most trusted supplement for prostate health free. Super Beta Prostate is my number one pick for men over 40 because it has ingredients shown to reduce bathroom trips and reduce waking at night to go. I like it because it's all natural and it works. If I didn't believe in Super Beta, I wouldn't be here telling you about it. Take it from Clyde. You have got to make this call.
Call for your free bottle of Super Beta Prostate. All you pay is a small shipping and handling charge. For details, call 1-800-927-4722. Hurry. This free offer's for a limited time only. Call 1-800-927-4722. That's 1-800-927-4722. Call 1-800-927-4722.
Never play leapfrog with a unicorn. Never run with scissors, unless you're a tardy barber. Never wear a fanny pack. No, really, don't ever wear a fanny pack. And never trust a car that hasn't been trusted to Midas. Save on brakes, maintenance, and total car care for a car you can depend on long after the warranty expires. You deserve the Midas touch. Get a comprehensive oil change, tire rotation, and visual brake check for $24.99. Up to 5 quarts conventional oil. Shop fees extra. Most vehicles at participating Midas.
Welcome back to Radio Rehab on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM WEOA. Phone lines are always open to share your live comments, so give us a call right now at 812-424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. And now, back to Radio Rehab.
We're back now. Marty has gone into day treatment at the Mulberry Center, and he's going to meetings, AA meetings, and finally getting himself dried up.
They told me in treatment that I needed to get a home group, and I was 2 months sober, and I was still going to IOP once a week, and I got a beginner's group home group, the Challengers meeting, and it's still in existence, and heard a lot about service work, and I saw a lot about service work too in AA, and thank God for service work, because that's what a lot of times carries me through when I am being defiant and I don't want to hit my knees. But so my first home group was this beginners meeting, and they were having elections, and someone said, Marty, we need a central office rep. And I was like, I can't be a central office rep. And I'm like, why not? And I said, because I don't have 6 months, you know, because I'm going to turn the tables around now. You know, you're telling me I have to have 6 months to do all this stuff. And now all of a sudden, The rules change. Like, Marty, look around the room. Nobody has 6 months. Okay.
Wow, so you were...
I was thrown into the center of the boat, and thank God. You know, yeah. I was chairing meetings. I look back at some of those meetings now, and I think, oh my God, those poor people.
No. It was a beginner's meeting.
And, you know, but this solution has always been there for me, and for me, getting out of myself has always been the most important thing. My first sponsor guided me through the first 5 steps of AA. He left for law school. Still a very good friend of mine today. And that's, you know, I have sincere friendships in Alcoholics Anonymous.
So were you comfortable being sober? Or did you just do it because you knew there was something better at the other end?
I didn't want to drink.
You didn't want to drink ever?
I didn't want to drink. I looked at you people, and you were having a good time, you were laughing, and you were living life on life's terms. And I'd never done that before. Mm-hmm. And it was scary. Mm-hmm. God, it was scary.
Because you weren't numbing out anymore.
I wasn't ready for that. And I was, you know, building relationships with people, especially with a sponsor, and thank God for sponsorship. You know,
learn how to love.
You do. Yeah. You do. And if you've got a sponsor and you're not using them, you're discrediting your sobriety and theirs.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think it's very important that you become accountable. The second sponsor I had after my first sponsor left, he saved my life. I had been sober for almost a year when I switched sponsors. This guy literally saved my life. He demanded that I sit down with him once a week, that I went to 4 meetings a week, that I got a home group. I was not crazy about sitting down face-to-face with this person. Because, you know, on the telephone, I can
Relationships aren't so easy for us, are they?
I can tell you everything is good, but you know, my body language tells you something else. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of that was, is I got to learn this person as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he guided me through a very long period of my sobriety. He guided me through the loss of a job. You know, I'm not the first drunk to lose a job.
Right.
But you know, when you're going through
those firsts. Firsts of sobriety, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. But he, you know, I remember when I lost my job in sobriety, he told me, he said, you know, you can, it's okay to pull the covers over your head for a couple of days, just a couple of days. And I was like, no, it's not. Because if I do that, I'm going to die.
You knew yourself that well.
I knew what would happen.
If you went under those covers, you'd stay there.
So the next day I got up. I had never gone to Columbia and Linwood prior to that. I was 7 years sober. I'd never gone to Columbia and Linwood. And that's a staple in sobriety
in this town.
Absolutely. You know? And I went to the noon meeting, and thank God I did. And it was right around the holidays. And my sponsor today said, they need someone to chair the Christmas Day luncheon. And I'm like, I can't do that. And he's like, why? You ain't got a job? You're not doing anything right now anyway. Which is true.
Yeah.
You know?
Pushed you right into service.
I've had the opportunity to go into a career that I never thought that I would ever want. It's still dealing with people, not on a face-to-face basis. I work for a company that's somewhat, well, not liked in our community, but that's okay. You know, everybody's got to do something.
Right, right.
I've had the opportunity. I got to, my first exposure to AA was 5 days sober at the Tri-State Convention. And 10 years later, I got to chair the 50th anniversary of that Tri-State Convention.
Wow.
And which I didn't want to do.
Right.
I did it. And it was amazing to sit there in front of 517 people and watch the lights come on. And that's what I love about this program today is that I get to see the light come on in someone's life. I get to see the brokenness of the desperate when they walk in the doors, and I get to see them come and change things.
Where can people find you, Marty, if they're listening? And
well, if they want to find me, they can find me at Sunday mornings in Newburgh at the Kiwanis building. I go to a Sunday night meeting. I hit and miss. I go to St. Anthony's Saturday mornings. There's a beginners meeting there. If you don't know a whole lot about recovery, that's a good place to start. It's a good foundation.
St. Anthony's?
St. Anthony's
at
on First Avenue, 10 a.m.
10 a.m.
I've been hitting the 5:30 meeting, not on a regular basis. It's kind of weird to go back to where you first got sober.
Yeah.
But it's also rewarding, too, to see that there are other people carrying it on. Because, you know, when we get a few years sober, we start thinking, they're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's not the case.
Right.
They're doing what we were doing, and we weren't doing it right either. The blessing is that I'm still sober today.
Yes.
And little did I know that by taking few simple actions on a regular basis and staying in the center of the boat.
Well, it just sounds like you went to a lot of AA meetings.
I did.
So maybe what we need to let people know is that's where it's at. Go to meetings, whether you like them or not. Find AA.
I think the things that are most important is the meetings.
Yeah.
You know, find where, you know what, and the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is, if you say you belong, you belong.
Right.
Because there is no guidelines saying you are not
an alcoholic. A member if you say you are.
And I love that.
And you don't have to be an alcoholic for alcohol to hurt you either. So
exactly. But, you know, I think that going to a lot of meetings in the beginning, and I think I believe wholeheartedly finding a power, a God of my understanding. And I found that through the meetings, but I found that through sponsorship.
Right.
And I think it's important.
I think
it is crucial to my sobriety to stay involved with other alcoholics.
Well, and you said that higher power is so important for us to have, even if it is a sponsor at first.
Right. You know,
that brings God right to us,
exactly,
face to face.
You know, and it, you know, it's not a recovering faith meeting of any sort. You know,
right.
It's coming to terms with someone. And, if it, you know, when I got here, and for years I thought that it was a vengeful God. And today I know that it's a loving God. You know, I was sober just a few months when 9/11 hit. And I think back to that, and a all these people that I was in treatment with, and they were all questioning God and everything like that. But you know, for all the sadness that came out of that, there were a lot of heroes that walked out of this. And you know, that's amazing.
Yes, it is.
And there are heroes every day, and most of my heroes are the ones that are living life on life's terms and doing the deal on a regular basis. So,
wow, Marty, you're amazing. You are my hero to have gone from that kind of pain and then alcoholism and then more pain and then sobriety now and be so involved and sensitive and sharing. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Will you come back and let us have you back here and do a question answer?
Sure. I'd love to.
And if people want to get a hold of Marty, you could always call here, Radio Rehab, and talk to Jerome, our radio announcer in the front, or anybody here during the week, Sharon, and we can find Marty if you need somebody to talk to one-on-one. So you don't have to use your last name. You just call and say, I want to know how to get a hold of that guy, Marty, that was on Radio Rehab, and we'll find Marty. You're pretty transparent. You're pretty available, aren't you?
I try to be. And that was something they told us in the beginning, is to be available, you know.
And you are.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. And I will see you at the Kiwanis Club on Sunday at 10 a.m. Love you, Marty.
Thank you.
Thanks, Radio Rehab, for tuning in today. This hour is like a meeting for me to share recovery. So don't give up hope. Always know that you don't have to live that way or drink that way or drug that way ever again. It just takes a few simple steps. Thanks for sharing with us those steps, Marty. And between now and next Saturday, don't forget to do the next right thing.
Thank you for tuning in to Radio Rehab. And what an awesome show today was. Once again, we want to thank our guests and host for donating their time to this program of recovery. Radio Rehab is only a support to the real work of recovery and does not offer definitive answers or attempt to counsel anyone in their own personal behavior. Although the show does not endorse any program of recovery, it holds the belief that most recovery works are in an effort of true conviction and concern for the benefit of the suffering, and can be trusted to offer real hope and better choices. Radio Rehab airs every Saturday morning from 10 until 11 on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM WEOA and at 1400amweoa.com.
Our country was stricken by horrific tragedies in 2012. This has brought the topic of mental health to the forefront of all of our minds.